you can host the best backyard barbecue. When you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
Welcome to another episode of Kotaku Split Screen. It's May 19th, 2016, and my name is Kirk Hamilton, and I'm back, temporarily back from my month away from Kotaku to join you all and to join Jason to talk about video games. The main game we're going to be talking about this week is Uncharted 4, Thief's End. Our discussion will have some spoilers, nothing too crazy, but if you haven't played the game and you don't want to hear anything about it, you'll have to skip to about 44 minutes in to miss our conversation of that. We will also be talking about the new Doom, which is a whole lot of fun, a shockingly fun game. I will be asking Jason what he's been up to without me and how much I'm sure that he's missed me and a whole lot more, so stick around. All right, it is good to be back. I am sort of back. I'm technically back. I'm looking at Jason Schreier right now on a screen, so I guess that that means I'm back. Does that mean I'm back, Jason?
Kirk, welcome. It's good to have you here. I mean, I was getting used to you not being here and kind of enjoying being the solo host and getting to be in control.
I'm sure. On my own, I can't imagine that you would enjoy that, but I'm really surprised to hear that that would be something you would like.
Yeah, it's none of my personality at all.
No.
Kirk, how is your sabbatical going?
It's going great, man.
You took the time to write us this incredible intro music.
I did write some new theme song. I wrote us a new theme song and pulled out the saxophone and finally got sexy with it.
I had mentioned, hey, it would be cool if we had a faster paced theme song, something that was more like Idea's theme from Bravely Default, and you were like, yep, bam, and in like a week you were
well,
like,
well, it's funny because I think you know how much I love that piece of music in particular, because it's just so like the Beverly Hills 90210 theme song with this like juicy guitar and like cheesy saxophone. I think it's soprano
so
saxophone
good.
On that recording, but I was like, yeah, I can write that in 5 seconds. Like, that'll be a piece
well,
of cake.
Well, it is awesome, and I bet people are really going to dig it. You can, of course, feel free to let us know if you like it or hate it. Send Kirk nasty tweets if you hate it.
Or send
Kirk
me nice tweets if you like it. Yeah, I'm going to post a full version of it on my SoundCloud, which I've actually been... So I've been using the sabbatical to write music, so I've been posting a bunch of kind of old and new stuff on my SoundCloud just sort of for fun to kind of get it all out there, because I have all these demos that I've never posted. So it's been a pretty good May in general. It's not that I don't like my job, but like,
you're not working. Wait, hold on. So are you recording a new album that you're going to start selling and whatnot?
Yeah, well, so I've been working on, I've got a ton of old material, because basically for the last 5 years I haven't released any music, and that's unusual because before that I was releasing stuff pretty regularly. And I've written all this music, and the way that I write is to, I play a lot of instruments, so I'll record stuff, basically these, like, self-contained recordings that are really fun, and I like to just noodle around and kind of perfect them. I did the same thing for the theme music, which is, like, mostly sampled instruments, some real instruments. And I had these recordings that I just hadn't known what to do with. They're sort of sketches for an album, which I am working on. But then I was like, well, I have all these sketches of this music. I should just start putting it out there and like just posting it for anyone who wants to hear it. Cause there's definitely people who say, dude, I want to hear what you're working on. So that was why I kind of like my SoundCloud page had just been like full of weird video game sound effects and like microphone tests for headphones and stuff, like gaming headsets I'd been reviewing. So I kind of like cleaned it up and like made it into an actual musician's SoundCloud page. And now I'm kind of starting to go through old things and remix them and work them out and post them. So I'm doing that. And then also I don't know what my next album is going to look like yet. Like 2 weeks isn't enough time, I think, to put that together. But I've just been writing a lot and charting stuff out. And playing a lot too, so I actually have a cool musical story for you.
Okay, I'm ready.
So I did a session last week, a horn section session for a singer named Sally Ford, who's a really cool Portland local singer, and she wanted to add horns to a couple of tunes in her album, so I did arrangements for it. For baritone sax, I played tenor, and then for trumpet. So it's kind of like a, like, 60s-style sort of Motown sound. And on the session, the baritone sax player was this guy named Ralph Carney, who, it turns out, plays a baritone sax solo that I think you probably know. He's the guy who plays the Barry sax solo at the beginning of BoJack Horseman.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. So
That's so cool.
Isn't that cool? I've known him for a little while. He's a wild dude. He's really cool. He lived in the Bay Area in San Francisco when I lived there. And his nephew is the drummer in the Black Keys in that band. And he co-wrote the intro to BoJack Horseman, and then, like, with Ralph, and had Ralph, like, play Barry's sax on it. So, like, that Barry riff that plays at the end of every intro to BoJack Horseman is the guy that I was, like, recording with, which was pretty fun.
That's cool. Talented family. Man, that show, you should tell people what that show is.
Yeah.
And how good it is.
It's really good. Have we talked about it on the podcast before?
I don't think so.
God damn, it's a good show.
Another time.
Yeah, we don't have to get
topic episode.
Yeah, we don't have to get too sidetracked. But yes, BoJack Horseman is one of the best shows. So that was a fun little bonus. But yeah, man, it's been a good break. I played some games, but mostly not playing a lot.
Yeah, so I would think so. People might be interested in hearing. So for someone like you who plays games basically for a living, I mean, obviously we do a lot of other stuff at Kotaku, but it's your job to play video games.
Mm-hmm.
Does it, when you're like really on vacation for a 4-week sabbatical, does it feel like work to play games? Like, is it, do you approach it differently?
No, I do approach it differently. Like, I just haven't played as many games. And when I do, it's more like if there's just really a downtime where my rhythm of the day is sort of like play piano and like learn other people's music in the morning and then work on my own stuff in the afternoon. And then usually it's broken up by other things. And then there will come a point where maybe I like it's the evening and I don't have anything to do. And I'm like, all right, I'm going to play. Like, I played some Bloodborne or like something like kind of randomly.
But didn't you marathon Uncharted?
Yeah, but that was largely before I was on break or like kind of right as the sabbatical was beginning. So that was a little bit different. But I've been playing.
Also, it was Uncharted.
Right. And I was going to play that no matter what. But
which we'll talk about in a little bit.
Yes. It's mostly the same, but I'm just playing fewer games. So there's just less of a feeling of constantly playing, which has been really nice, actually, to play.
So do you still, like, I find when I'm playing games, I can never turn off that feeling in my head that's like, oh, this would make a good story. Oh, I should post this. Oh, I should capture video of this. Are you able to turn that off when you're on Sabbath?
I have been. Yeah. It's been nice. I usually am not. But, like, like playing Uncharted, I had a lot of thoughts. But I was also thinking, I knew we were going to do this podcast and we're going to talk a lot about Uncharted. So I kind of saved those ideas for this. I was like, that'll be plenty. Like, there's so much written about Uncharted, and Kotaku wrote so much about Uncharted that I was, I don't really feel like Kotaku is lacking for opinions about that game. And then I knew I'd get to talk about it with you.
Yeah, what'd you think of Uncharted 4, man?
I liked it. I liked it more as it went. But I have criticisms. Like, there were things about it that disappointed me. And then one of them, this is maybe a good pivot, is I do think, I was thinking about what the story basically accomplishes, like what the themes are and like what the point is. So it's interesting when you look at what Uncharted 3 was about. I think I basically see Uncharted 4 as this weird echo of Uncharted 3 that's like a better game. It's like a better version of Uncharted 3 in a lot of ways. But because Uncharted 3 had already covered the ground that that it covered, it couldn't do what it did. So basically, Uncharted 3 was this kind of origin story for Nathan Drake. Like, it was like, it went back to Drake's roots, which none of the first two games had done. And it was all about Drake and Sully. Like, it was like, that was the sort of central relationship, where like Uncharted 2 was a love triangle between Nate and Chloe and Elena, and it kind of winds up with him and Elena together. Uncharted 3 is mostly concerned with Nate and Sully. And so it goes back to like when like it starts, and it has this early flashback to young Nathan Drake and like him meeting Sully and like getting to know him, and then and him like kind of like you like learn his backstory and how he was at an orphanage, and then over the course of the game it's all about this exploration of like his relationship with Sully, and then also Elena comes back in, and it's like about whether he's like pulling her back into this world, and they're kind of estranged from one another. Like, they, I think they were married, and then they kind of split up because he couldn't stop doing his job. There's kind of like all of this stuff that if you just played Uncharted 4 feels really familiar. Like, it's all kind of the same stuff, only with Drake's brother subbed in for Sully. And I think it worked better with Sully for me because Sully was a character that I'd known for the whole trilogy, and it made sense for the third game to explore that and like Nathan Drake's father figure and for them to go back and like do this like father-son relationship. Then to again have his brother, who's like kind of not a father figure, he's more of a like pseudo father figure, also like mirror of Drake, and just basically do the same thing. Like, it's like goes back to young Drake and it goes back to his origins and it like traces his, and it has him like estranged from Elena kind of for like a minute, which is maybe the most interesting part of the game. You know, it did feel perfunctory. Maybe that's like an overstatement, but it felt like they were treading the same ground again.
Yeah, but the added thing that you didn't talk about there is that kind of guilt and the burden of that Nathan has felt all these years. If you play the game and you buy that his brother existed all along and wasn't just added for this game,
but he totally was, right?
Like, I bought it when I was playing. I think I bought it pretty well.
But like, if you went back and played Uncharted 2 and 3, which I granted isn't exactly fair, like when you consider the series as a whole, if you go back and play Uncharted 2, I don't really get the sense that Nathan Drake is this guy who like tragically lost his brother and thinks he's dead this whole time. Like,
no. But it shines in Uncharted 4, and in this game, like, I think it adds that dimension that I didn't play all of 3, but that I didn't see in 3 that I thought was really interesting, and kind of the dynamic there, and seeing them bond and seeing them fight and seeing Sam, his brother, kind of pull him in one direction when Elena's pulling him in another one. I thought that was pretty well done.
Yeah, I mean,
especially because they did such a good job of setting up Nathan's relationship with Elena in a way that made it feel very human and very real.
Right.
That
and
I don't think has been in past games.
Yeah, I think that, well, Uncharted 3 did some cool stuff with Elena, but it was all implied. Like, there was some really nice, really subtle stuff that I think they carried over in Uncharted 4. Like, there's just a scene, I can't remember the exact dialogue, but he sees her again for the first time and he's like, "You're not wearing the ring." And it's this, and it's really cool. It's a really great scene because you don't really know what the deal is with them. You know, they got together at the end of 2, and you know she's kind of not in the picture in 3. And then it's this really, it says so much in this really subtle, like, one line that, you know, they've kind of become estranged from one another. And then over the course of the game, get back together. It's handled well, but then I really liked how 4 really got into it and, like, you know, showed them together and showed their happy life together. The scene you wrote about, the Crash Bandicoot scene, it's like so good.
Yeah, I know, but I didn't really understand, and maybe because I didn't finish 3, I don't get this. I don't really understand how Elena transformed from, like, this photojournalist who was, like, enjoying going on these adventures to the nagging wife who hates it.
Well, I think that was also part of the thing they didn't quite... I think they really were going for it with 4, and it was interesting, like, where basically she's not the nagging wife. Like, they keep saying, coming back and being like, she wants him to take that job, the job that,
right,
that he's
flirting
with.
Right, she just wants him to be honest. So why was Nathan lying in the first place?
Because he wanted to protect her, which I think is just, like, a corny trope.
Like,
basically,
he's Batman.
Well, especially because when you look at how freaking ridiculous, how capable she and everybody else in these games is, like, throughout every single one, like, why would you ever worry about anybody? But yeah, I liked that. I thought my favorite part of Uncharted 4, my favorite sequence or series of levels, is a little ways in when she turns back up, and then you and she are adventuring through the jungle, and she's really pissed. Like, she basically is, he's lied to her kind of one too many times, and it's really she says to him, she's like, "I almost didn't come back." And then he's really in the doghouse, but she did come back for him, so he knows it's probably okay. But it just, the dynamic there was so, if you've been in a relationship and been in the doghouse and been working your way out of it, like, they really nailed it. Like, just the way that she is sort of enjoying herself and he keeps trying to kind of broach the subject, but then she doesn't want to talk about it, but then she does, and then there's these nice little downtime periods in between hilarious, ridiculous gunfights where she'll say, like, you know, I'm happy to be here, this is going well, and then it kind of builds up to, and I won't do the particulars maybe, but they find sort of the truth of what happened at Libertalia, is that the name of the
Libertalia city? Yeah.
Libertalia. And he basically, it's, even watching it, I remember thinking this would be one of the most amazing historical finds in history. Like, if someone really discovered this, would be incredible. And you see on his face that he says the same thing basically, and she looks at him and she's sort of watching him and she sees how much he loves this and like how it's like a really great moment, and it's like right when she forgives him basically and says, you know, this is you, like this is what you love doing. And that sequence was, I thought,
the dinner
table
scene
was just really, really well done.
That I thought all of Libertalia was like the thought that I think that was the best like discovery and story of like ancient story they've had in an Uncharted game.
Yeah, really, I agree.
Like it was really cool to dig in and learn about all this pirate history. Did you catch the Guybrush Threepwood reference?
No, what was it?
One of the pirates, like I think in the part where you have to like name all the pirates and you go look at their portraits and figure out how many triangles. Yeah. One of them, their name is missing, and it turns out it looks exactly like Guybrush Threepwood.
Oh man, I can't believe I missed that. Oh, that's so funny.
From Monkey Island.
Yeah, yeah, I remember the one who was missing. Oh, that's super funny.
But anyway, yeah, digging into all that was really cool. Mm-hmm. It definitely. You could tell that this was written and crafted by the people who made The Last of Us, even though it wasn't quite as crazy and incredible
and like
so
the
many
characters.
Ways
I mean, you just can't do on a lot of levels. I'm just not as interested in Nathan Drake and his brother, who's this new character, as I was
as Joel
in
and
Joel
Ellie.
And Ellie. Like, partly because of the way those characters were written, partly just because that dynamic is super interesting. Like, I think the dynamic of a man who lost his daughter, who then has a chance at having another one, and then she's like, you know, their whole thing was so interesting and like different. Where the dark brother who like draws you into the life of crime or whatever is like such a kind of more played thing. And there really were a lot of scenes where like Sully, I think it's early on especially, where like Sully and Sam and Drake and Nathan are all talking, and I like I'm just like I can't even tell who's who. Like I kind of can, but like it really does start to blend together, and you're like, it's just these three like dudes, and they all have the like voice actor dude voice. It's like a really nice voice, but they kind of all sound the same, and I'm just like, like this just isn't, this dynamic isn't doing it for me.
Yeah, and then they brought in this character, and we should get to the gameplay, but they added this character who's like this badass woman with giant triceps named
Nadine. With like the best arms in like video game history.
And then they do nothing with her.
It was really weird.
It felt like a last minute addition almost.
And especially like, you know, toward the end, which I guess we'll talk about later. But yeah, there was just never like a moment where either I was like waiting for her to either switch sides, because she just was introduced as like a sympathetic character kind of from the beginning. And I was like, she just doesn't seem evil. Which I think this game had a huge villain problem in general.
Yes.
Where games like this don't need villains. Like, The Last of Us didn't really have a villain and didn't matter. But, like, it...
Well, the villain was the environment and the world around you.
But, I mean, like, that could be... The villain could be the mystery, basically. Like, it could be...
I don't know. I think Uncharted 2, one of the reasons it stands out to so many people is because the villain was pretty crazy.
Except for the fight against him.
The fight sucked. He was an interesting villain.
He was at least a villain. Yeah,
I think an interesting... In this game, the motivations of the villain, Rafe, are like...
It's so unclear.
You discovered things, and I'm jealous or something like that.
I'm a dick, and you're cooler than me, and I'm not.
I think he straight up says during the last fight against him, he's straight up like, you, like, Nathan Drake finds everything.
Yeah.
I don't know. It was nonsense.
You're like, really?
But yeah, but then Nadine, like, she comes in, like, has a couple of fights with the main characters, and then disappears, and it's really... a bummer, because I wonder if they'll do DLC with her.
That's my feeling, is that she's going to star in the DLC. That wouldn't surprise me. But that's also a shame, like, that if she could have had a more major role and it was like added in DLC, like I guess that's it's better
this
than
this has
nothing,
gotten pretty spoilery, by the way. You should warn.
Yeah, I mean, honestly, like, I think we're kind of
give a spoiler warning.
We mentioned enough stuff at the end.
We won't have to spoil the epilogue. But the other thing that really stood out to me about Uncharted 4, which I also really enjoyed, I should say, I thought it was a really well made game and obviously gorgeous game.
Yeah.
But the thing that really stood out to me is the stealth fight encounters, and the stealth and the shooting. All felt really good to me. I really enjoyed it. And this is coming not far off from Metal Gear Solid 5, which might have the best, like, kind of sandboxy stealth encounters of any game ever. This felt like kind of a light version of that. But very light version of that. But even the basic core of, like, you tag enemies and you figure out ways to approach them and you learn their patterns and you try to decide whether you want to sneak around them or shoot them, et cetera, that felt really good to me, and I really enjoyed that in a way that I didn't enjoy it in other Uncharted games.
I Yeah, I agree with that. I think it was definitely the best of any of the Uncharted games. I thought the stealth was a lot more fun than the shooting. I just have an issue with Uncharted combat, I think. I don't really love it. It feels like...
Still? I thought it was so much better this time.
Yeah, it was improved, but it still just doesn't quite have that feeling of, like, enemies are just constantly pegging me with bullets, and you're constantly getting flanked, and they're really aggressive, which I know is, like, to get you moving around. But there were just so many times where I felt like I didn't know where everybody was. Waves of dudes would turn up. Like, I would have everybody marked, and I would, you know, be clearing out dudes by stealth. And then I'd say, okay, well, fuck it. There's three guys left. Let's get in a gunfight. And I'd start shooting, and before I knew it, another wave would come in. And then I'm sort of surrounded, and there's, like, a shotgun guy coming up. And I'm sort of jumping and, like, okay, I'm moving. And it doesn't have that feeling of, like... It's not like it needs to be easy, but it doesn't have a feeling of situational awareness that I really like or find satisfying. So there's a lot of times where I just been like, fuck, I'm like getting flanked, and I finally find cover, and then I'm immediately sort of getting shot from somewhere I can't see. And like that feeling to me like is sort of not that fun. A lot of the times the fights feel really scrappy, and it's close to being the like scrappy, like you're really improvising and like grabbing new guns off the ground because your one gun ran out of ammo, and jumping up and swinging off of a rope and killing a guy, except that you take a few too few shots to die, maybe, is it?
Yeah, and like too fragile.
Yeah, and like you can't do things like the ropes in combat I think would be really cool, because I really like how the rope mechanic feels in the game, but you can't quite do a thing where you like jump and swing onto a rope and like land on a guy and melee him. And by the time you have done that, most of the time, like, everyone around me is just shooting me. And I've, like, landed, and I'm like, don't even know which direction is safe to go for cover. And it could be on me for, like, not crafting better vectors through the play space or whatever, but the combat itself still leaves something to be desired. And also, like, just the gun handling. I've never really quite warmed to it. It feels real loose, and, like, the guns kind of float around. Like, I like the guns that there are more guns that let you zoom with a scope, because that made it a little easier.
Yeah, the sniper rifles are cool.
Yeah, they're
did
better.
You turn off the auto like targeting?
Oh yeah, it's kind of cool snapping. That there was that really aggressive one that like just sticks your gun to people. Like, if someone wants to play it and not deal with it, I get that totally. And like, I think that was a cool like middle ground between just a combat free option and that. But yeah, I don't know, like compared to like a Gears of War, like a game that really does third person shooting super well, I don't think it's that great, but all of those and as a stealth game, like, I think it's fine. I do wish there was a way to manipulate the AI. like, I wish there was some kind of a rock you could throw or a whistle.
Yeah, that was sorely missing. It just, even The Last of Us had a lot of stuff.
Oh yeah, like The Last of Us stealth was bricks and definitely whatnot, definitely superior. And like, just, and like, there was more of a sense that you could get spotted and then run, and they'd lose you a lot faster, just because everything was kind of ground level and like moved a little slower, which worked better for me. Where in this, if you got spotted, it was very hard to lose them. And every time I did, I'd be really glad that that was still possible. And I'm super glad the game had stealth. I think the stealth like was way better than if it had just been gunfight after gunfight, like Uncharted 2 or 3.
Yeah.
But
getting the smile and confidence you've been dreaming about, all from the comfort of your home, isn't a total mystery with Byte Clear Aligners. Just don't be surprised if all your friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces, plus they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Delve into the shadows of the mind with Sleeping Dogs, a gripping murder mystery starring Academy Award winner Russell Crowe. Now available on digital. Crowe portrays an ex-homicide detective unraveling a brutal murder he can't recall. Uncovering secrets from his past, he learns a chilling truth. It's best to let sleeping dogs lie. Visit sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery to watch Sleeping Dogs, now on digital. That's sleepingdogsmovie.com/wondery.
But yeah, I mean, that said, the pacing of this game, I think, is really fascinating. I don't know, like, what did you think about the overall pacing?
It starts off slowly, and then it gets better and better as you go. I actually thought the second half, the Libertalia section, was the only one that felt like it really dragged a mm-hmm. little bit for me, because mm-hmm. it felt like just so many different caves to climb
through.
There does
come a point, yeah, towards the final act where you're just like, okay, like,
yeah. Until you're really like, or actually, I think you do the city, and then you're escaping, and then there are more caves, I believe. And that was the part that was really like, all right, enough with these caves. But overall, it felt really snappy to me. I never got bored. I never was like looking at the timer, trying to figure out how much longer I would have to play.
Oh yeah, no, definitely not.
I mean, it helps that everything is like such a spectacle. I was hitting the screenshot button every 30 seconds because everything's so incredible to look at. It's funny. I've been seeing people, like game developers on Twitter, tweeting about like how they've been working in games for years and years, and they have no idea how Naughty Dog pulled this off. Like, one person was like, I've been doing animation for 15 years. I'm going to quit my job after seeing Naughty Dog. Like, I can't do anything after seeing Uncharted 4. So yeah, that was always impressive, and I think that is the eye candy really combined with everything else makes the game a lot more watchable and a lot more fun to play and a lot more of an enjoyable experience, because you can't help but like be wowed at what you're looking at.
Especially this stuff.
Incredible.
You posted that Digital Foundry, like, they did a real kind of deep analysis of
the water and the smoke and the fire.
There's a thing that Naughty Dog has done for a while where, and now they finally, I think, have the hardware to do it all in how everything is in engine. So there'll just be these seamless sequences, like when you're in the Jeep and the Jeep like goes like falls off the cliff, and then the camera like swings around and like you fall out, and suddenly you're controlling Drake hanging off the, and it's just so, I mean, they even did that on PS3, like but this game does it even more, like, just to a point where you're like, holy shit, this is just on a technological level absurd.
Yeah, it's funny because I'm so used to, and I'm so in love with 2D graphics and like JRPGs that are like old school style, and like really the art direction stands out a lot more than any sort of technical wizardry. And I tend to prefer those games almost over 3D pretty looking games. But this game just like kept wowing me, and I was like it's definitely the prettiest game I've ever played, and it probably will be for time to come.
There are definitely, like, especially the vistas and the sort of graphics. I did think, actually, I don't know if I haven't really been reading too much about this game, but seen whether this is a common thing, but I actually did find some of the facial capture to be a little uncanny valley for me in a way that I didn't actually feel about. I guess I sometimes felt about The Last of Us or Uncharted 3.
What about L.A. Noire? How does it compare to L.A. Noire?
It's better. It doesn't look like weird human faces on like ragdoll.
Stick dolls. Figures.
But it did. There were just times where like their eyes would kind of float and their faces a little weird. The facial animations were like real close to being right, but not quite. And so it weirded me out. But generally, yeah, there are a few times where, and this sounds stupid maybe, but where Drake is just kind of standing there and the light is hitting him a certain way, and it's all that, like, you know, whatever, like, effects that have the light, like, reflect off of his skin in certain ways. And he just is looking up, and it was just bananas looking, like, where he just looks like a real person.
Yeah.
And, it's pretty impressive.
Because he is a real person.
He is, and he's Nathan Drake. We can believe in him. You'll really believe in him if you believe that his skin reflects light in the way that a human being's skin reflects light.
Believe in him.
The pacing, I thought, was really interesting. I thought the beginning was too slow because they just took a long time onboarding you with all the abilities, and it just takes so long until after Scotland where you finally, like, it's like, okay, now you like have all the tools you're basically going to get except for the Piton, and you're good to go. But then after that, I thought the pacing was really interesting. It seemed very deliberate that I think there's just less gunfighting in this game. Like, there are just less combat sequences and more puzzle sequences. And the puzzles in this game are interesting, like, compared to Tomb Raider or something, because they're not really, like, that hard, or there's nothing really to them. They kind of hold your hand, and you just sort of do them, and you look at Drake's journal, and
they fucking tell
like,
you what to do.
Yeah.
If you don't, like, if you take too long. I hate that
I hate
so
that,
much.
Too. And you can't turn it off. I wish you could turn that off. I hate when they're like,
it's ridiculous.
They're like, go climb the thing. Like, pull that lever. Try pulling the lever, Nate.
Sometimes it just takes you a little while to think of what to do.
Or you're just walking around looking for, like, treasures or something.
Yeah, exactly. And the game's like, well, here's what you do.
Yeah, hurry the fuck up. Yeah, that bugs me. And also just, I mean, even when there's a puzzle, you just look at Nate's like journal and it just says how to do it. It's like 1 + 2 = 3. Like, is like, will this be the answer? So, but yeah. I kind of don't think the puzzles are meant to be quite Tomb Raider-y puzzles where you're working physics and figuring things out. They're kind of like character building time. Like, you're kind of walking around and talking. And there's so much of that in the game, and it's all well done because the writing is good and the performances are good, and it's like this nice downtime, and you're looking at beautiful stuff, and it's interesting. Like that whole sequence where you're where Nate and Elena are going through the caves with like the mummies that are exploding, and they're kind of talking.
That was cool.
Yeah, really cool. It was really cool, and it was like kind of not really a puzzle, but not really combat, and you couldn't really die. I kept like walking right, I'd fuck up and like be standing right next to when it blew up, and it still wouldn't kill me.
You could die. Oh yeah, okay. I died a few times on that.
Yeah, and then you do get in some fights, I guess, where you use that. But I liked like that.
No,
kind of...
I died to the mummies more than a few times. Right. If you're standing next, to, if you're like really close, or if you get hit by two of them,
I would think two would probably kill you.
It was funny. I kept like feeling bad for Nathan Drake that he was inhaling all these toxic chemicals.
I feel worse for my companions when I die, though. Like, I feel so bad because they're always so sad. They're like, Nate, no! And like, you picture like
Snake!
And it's kind of like, what if the story just ended there? Like Nate and Elena are kind of having a fight, and the last thing they said to each other was something shitty, and then he just falls down a pit and dies. And she's like, no, like, fuck, I didn't mean, and I take it back.
And there should be a mode where you have permadeath, and every time you die, you have to see the consequences.
Right, there's like a...
And like cuts to Nathan's funeral.
What's that game, You Only Live Once? There was a game that did that, where like, you only live once, and then when you die, there's like a whole elaborate, like, the paramedics come and like check your body, and then the coroner
really?
Comes. Yeah, yeah. It's like a side-scrolling
That's
thing.
That's incredible. No, but like, okay, so imagine if they built in like 10 different death scenes where like, like depending when you died, you would have mm-hmm. to see the consequences.
It's
like
some really depressing cutscene.
That'd be incredible. Some AAA game should do that, like in an unexpected way. Mm-hmm. Some game that is like this linear action adventure type game, and they built in all these contingencies.
I actually do that sometimes when like I'm playing a like hard game or just a game that I get pretty far in and then kind of stop for whatever reason. I just pretend that like.
That
the story just kind of ended there. Like, my guy kind of got to this one boss and was like, well, fuck this, and then just sort of gave up. That was the end of the game.
Elena has moved on. Yeah. She married Sam.
She's like, well, it probably was a bad idea that I was married to this guy who kept jumping off of cliffs. He was going to fall eventually.
By the way, there are a couple things that I found really unrealistic in Uncharted 4. Mm. It's good that they ditched the supernatural stuff.
Yeah.
But Elena,
when you say unrealistic, do you mean unbelievable? Because unrealistic is probably pretty easy to find in this game. There's a lot of...
No, I mean unrealistic. Elena uses a Sony phone.
Right, that does make you think, wonder if there's another reason
for
it. Also,
she's a journalist who's employed. It doesn't have to do Facebook Live all day.
What? Hey, we're employed. That's maybe she's working for Facebook. What is her? I thought it was that she had kind of sold out and was like doing some like advertorial stuff. Maybe not.
She works for a travel magazine, I think.
Oh, okay. I bet there's still photographers who work for travel magazines, if that's still a thing.
So is the game supposed to be set in, like, 2000? Like, obviously, Crash Bandicoot. Like, Nathan says Crash has really realistic graphics.
I think that was just a joke because there's the scene later where he uses his phone to, like, snap photos and text them to his brother. And that's, like, at least within the last few years. So it's got...
But isn't it... Oh, I forget it. Doesn't he have a flip phone, though?
No. He uses, like, a smart... I think it's... No, he's... Maybe he's no. using her phone or something
he's
like that.
He's using someone else's phone.
But regardless, that technology
exists. But wait. But you could send pictures, like, 10 years ago.
No, but, like, but the actual phone he's using is, like, a touchscreen. Like iPhone, basically, like it has a big, wide, like 16:9 screen, and he's like taking HD photos and texting.
Oh, right, and there's a plot about his phone.
I like that because that whole sequence was funny to me because I kept being like, "Yeah, why don't they do this all the time? Like, why aren't they always using their phones to like communicate instead of like smoke signals and CB radios and stuff?" And then and it totally fucks them, and they're like, "Oh, I was like, okay, maybe that's why they don't use phones." Like,
yeah. Man, but it's a good game. I think it was really cool. It's good that they're done with Nathan Drake because I'm excited to see what other new stuff. Like, The Last of Us 2, I guess, will be cool.
Do we know? I couldn't remember if we even – because I don't want to – I still maintain that, like, I don't really actually want to play a sequel to The Last of Us. Like,
Yeah, it's a thing. They're doing it.
So maybe if they do
I want to see a new IP. I want to see them do something totally new.
Yeah, which I guess, I mean, that was what was so cool about The Last of Us. I guess if a sequel were just different characters in the world doing something totally different, like...
No, it doesn't have to. I think Joel and Ellie, I mean, I think their story can definitely continue.
But I liked the ending so much that I just really feel like I don't want to know what the next chapter is because I'm cool imagining it. And it would be really cool to play different characters and like maybe you get a sense of what happened. Like,
yeah, so wait. So if they do a sequel, I'm assuming I they're doing a sequel for sure. But the question is whether it'll be Joel and Ellie. Yeah. If it is, do they have to like – go back and resolve the
that's what I mean.
Does she have to find out the truth?
See, well, I've always taken the ending to mean that she knows, like, that she knows
the
truth.
You think
that,
okay,
like, her saying
right.
okay at the end is basically right. her forgiving him and being like, well, right. like, I gotta...
And they just agree never to talk about it.
Yeah,
again.
And she's like, okay, like, I understand you did that, and, like, that's...
Right.
You know, it's better to, like, live on with you and, like, just kind of, yeah, pretend it didn't happen and just accept it than to, like... not and have to deal with it.
But either way, that's that world and that environment is so incredible.
Those zombies, like, yeah, I guess it would be and that is actually one thing that from the small amount that I've played, Uncharted 4's multiplayer is fun, but I don't like it as much as The Last of Us multiplayer, which I still think is like shockingly good. And it's still fun. I have a feeling that there will still be people playing the remastered, the PS4 Uncharted multiplayer, like probably more than Uncharted 4. I don't know. It hasn't done that much for me.
It's funny that in the Uncharted 4 multiplayer, you can use the grappling hook as like a melee weapon, but you can't do that in single player.
Yeah, I know.
I wonder why that is.
I guess they didn't. I'm trying to think how it would even work in single player. It would probably be like a weird. Yeah, but I don't know.
Just knock someone out with it.
Right.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem that.
What would be good
to...
is if you could do it in stealth. Like, if you could, like, use it as a stealth weapon and quietly knock people out.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah,
they needed some more stuff like that. But yeah, I'm excited to see what else they wind up doing. Yeah, good game. I think it all. I don't think it is. So far, my game of the year as of mid May is The Witness, believe it or not. Mm. That's my favorite game.
This has been ridiculous. So this year has been completely
ridiculous.
It's been
ridiculous. A great year, but that game really, really resonated with me.
Well, and that was like just one of 10 games that I could already name that are just like some of the best games I've played in a long time.
And we haven't even played Zero Time Dilemma yet.
I know. Well, we or Persona 5 or like all these cool games coming out of Japan. I mean, next week the Witcher expansion comes out and that's going to... I'm almost certain be great. And then right now, like, the fact that Doom came out and Doom was good, to me it's just like, fuck, like every game is good, like every game that I've played has been fun. I mean, I know
every
that's an
game, hold on, Homefront came out yesterday.
Well, I haven't played that yet, but I mean, you know what I'm saying, like, it's like,
yeah, Doom, let's talk about Doom. So the really interesting thing about Doom, I think, is that it was in development hell for so long.
It's funny. It's funny because it's Doom.
No, I'm pretending you didn't say that.
It was such a good joke, though.
I'm pretending that didn't happen.
I'm going to laugh for both
anyway,
of us.
Anyway, it was in development hell for so long and went through so many reboots. It went through like three. I think this must be the third or the fourth
reboot. Wow. I thought it was rebooted twice. Three is a lot.
I think it would be the third.
Anyway,
but yeah,
anyway,
but
more than one is a lot.
Yeah, and a lot of people had left id Software, a lot of the big names there, and a lot of the really talented like systems engineers and stuff. And the fact that they righted the ship is so impressive. It's such a credit to them that they made this really good game
So I started playing this game thinking it was going to suck, like straight up. I was like, this game's going to be bad. I don't know.
Are you playing it on PC?
Yeah, on PC. And it's rad. I mean, it actually takes a little while to like get going, but holy shit, it's so good. It's like so the kind of first person. It's just this like bone cruncher, like first person game. It's fast as hell. It's all about like, honestly, it's a little bit like Destiny in that it feels really, really, really good to play. And the mobility of your character is super good. You get this double jump pretty early on. That's kind of like the Hunter double jump in Destiny. And so you're really like, you're flying through these really well-made environments with enemies everywhere. And you have to keep moving constantly. So you're just like leaping over dudes and jumping and mantling and like chainsaw a guy, grab ammo, switch to a gun, jump up, like double jump over and like land on a guy and like smash his head. And like, it's so fast and cool. And then it all works so well. Whoever designed it and whoever designed the levels, like whichever people did that, are really good at what they do. It's like, it's shockingly good.
Well, yeah, the other crazy thing is that I played the multiplayer beta for a little while, and it was boring as hell. Oh, God.
That's a great joke. We should just end the podcast
now. Yeah, but it was pretty boring. Mm. So I was really impressed that – I mean, I haven't played the single player yet, but the fact that people are saying it's this really good game mm-hmm. is even more impressive. I assume the multiplayer is similar to the beta, and it's just –
Yeah,
boring.
I mean, I could see the multiplayer being fun if it just – for the novelty of playing another like kind of Quake style Unreal Tournament style game like this. It feels to me like Unreal Tournament, which is the last sort of big first person shooter I got into, because it moves so fast. Your mobility is crazy. Your guns, like, you don't ever reload guns, which is one of the things I think they debated that and not having any jumping in the game. So it's cause to make it like the original Doom, and it's super good. Yeah, no jumping would have sucked, because the jumping in this game is so good and the verticality and the momentum are so good. But no reload is actually really cool. And the way they're so, like, I really like games that have complementary systems. And this game, so the way this game works is, you know, I remember watching the E3 demo. Do you remember where they did all those up close melee kills?
Yeah.
So that's in the game. And the way it works is you kind of shoot a dude a certain amount, or if you wing him with a shotgun up close, and it kind of starts glowing and like it's like staggered. And then you press the melee button kind of anywhere near it, and you'll do this really quick melee kill, which is like fine. Like, but the reason it is cool is because that's how you heal, basically. If you do that to an enemy, they drop a little bit of health. So these battles get really crazy, especially on the higher difficulties. So you kind of like start seeing, like, you'll see a low-level scrub, and you're like, all right, sweet. And you kind of wing him with your gun and then melee him, and you get health back. And so it kind of becomes a strategic thing that you do. And then, like, the chainsaw, you can only use a limited number of times. But when you chainsaw an enemy, you instantly kill it, and it dumps ammo everywhere. So it's basically, if you're kind of in the middle of one of these like really intense fights and you're leaping and jumping, you're out of rockets, and then you're out of shotgun, and then you're like starting to run out of plasma, and then there's a dude right there, you just pull out your chainsaw and kill him, and it like replenishes your ammo. So the whole thing, like, each system is designed to work with the other ones to kind of keep you moving and let you use it strategically. And that, I love that kind of stuff, and it's all so well done. It's really a game that was just really well made. It's really good.
It's funny. So between this and Wolfenstein, like the resurgence.
It's funny. It feels like Wolfenstein. I mean, it's not. It's very different in some ways, but it has that kind of, you know, let's go. It doesn't go all the way back to the 90s, but it goes back to kind of Half-Life era first person mm-hmm. shooter. Especially like I'm playing with, you know, mouse and keyboard on PC, and it just has that feel of like you don't have regenerating health. You have to get health kits. Like there's just this kind of like older feeling to it.
Some Quake, some Heretic.
It feels like that people have figured out that, oh, there's like market for this stuff and people like it.
Yeah. I think they figured it out like 20 years ago, and now they
kind of forgot. It isn't. I mean, it makes Doom as a series, and like the Doom 3, how Doom 3 was totally this Me Too. Okay, let's make a kind of like, you know, mid 2000s era first person shooter. And this so is like, fuck that. Like, we're going to go back and like make it feel like Doom.
Yeah.
And that was a way smarter call, just because it's a more fun game.
CarMax is putting peace of mind back in car shopping by putting you in the driver's seat to find a ride that's right for you. Because at CarMax, we believe you shouldn't just settle for a car. You should love your car. That's why every car we sell is CarMax certified quality, so you can be sure with upfront pricing that's the same for every customer. So don't settle. Find love at first drive and start shopping now at CarMax.com. CarMax, the way car buying should be.
That's funny. So what else are you playing? Anything else?
Bloodborne. Weirdly, like I
was going to ask Suikoden 2.
No, sorry. No Suikoden 2.
Jess and I on the podcast last week, Jess Chavez is here, and she and I were talking about Suikoden 2 and how you're a jerk for not playing.
Oh, I missed that part. I listened to part of the podcast, but I must have missed that part. I didn't play that, but I did go play Bloodborne, which is because I had played so much Dark Souls 3 and was like, I wonder what Bloodborne is like after this. And I like Bloodborne more than Dark Souls. I've established
that. You've decided.
Yes. Like that game is really good. And the combat in that game is extremely fun. Dark Souls is really good. good in a lot of the same ways. I prefer the way Bloodborne feels. So that's been interesting going back and playing that again.
Uh-huh. So last night I finished the main story campaign for Final Fantasy 14.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I got to level 50 and I did that. And so, like, so you have a basic conception of how MMOs work, right? You played some 14.
I played 14. Yeah, I played
so Guild you know how they're dungeons and they're like yep. instants yeah, and yeah, you yeah. go in. Okay, so at the end of the 14 campaign, it's really interesting because it's this heavy-duty story, and there are all these NPCs and characters that have personalities and they're all talking to you, and there's this big, epic, like, long plan called Operation Archon, and it's like this multi-pronged attack on enemy forces, and you have to go invade this castle, yada yada yada. Mm-hmm. So to do that, it's like a few normal quests, and then it culminates in two different dungeons, and both of these dungeons are 8-person dungeons, and you have to do them because that's the story. So as you're doing the dungeons, in between each encounter, there are all these different cutscenes, and like you meet a boss, and there's a whole cutscene full of dialogue where the boss talks, and it lasts a while. So the interesting thing is if people who are just skipping the cutscenes can keep playing through and fighting the boss.
Oh, funny. So you come out of the cutscene and like the battle is underway already?
Well, so yeah. So some of the time I told everyone before I started both of the dungeons, I was like, this is my first time. I'm going to be watching the cutscenes. And they're like, sure, go ahead. So I'm watching the cutscenes, and I expected that they would have to wait for me. But instead, it would be like I would in the middle of the cutscene, I would start getting notices on the bottom left saying, like, the next area is sealing off, which means that they start a triggered a boss because it seals you off from entering late. And then it would say, the next area is sealed off. And then I'd finish the cutscene, and I wouldn't be able to enter. And I'd just have to watch them fighting the boss.
That's funny.
Or some of the time, I would see a cutscene introducing the boss, and then the cutscene would end, and it would turn out that they had already beaten the boss, and it would just cut right to the next cutscene of the boss dying. So it was the weirdest, it was the most surreal thing. And because I think something – I don't really know the end game of Final Fantasy 14 just yet, but there are item levels, not unlike Destiny where you have your items have levels.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That's how you like get past the level cap. Mm-hmm. And I guess because the rest of my party, they were just grinding and farming that dungeon, their levels were high enough that they could just destroy every encounter with massive DPS. So they were able to defeat these bosses and I wouldn't even need to do anything. So it was kind of like an unsatisfying in that way, even though the story is really cool and like there are tons of epic cutscenes and like the narrative is really interesting and really good. But because I had to do it with this group of people who had all played it before, I mean, I guess I could have just like tried to find another 7 people who haven't done it yet. But that seems like it would be impossible. So yeah, it was interesting in that way. It was I wonder if there was a better way to do it. But that's such an MMO problem. It's like how do you tell a story while also doing the whole 8-person dungeon?
I mean, I remember that sounds very similar to the end of The Division where. But, you know, that game didn't have a great story, so it wasn't similar in that way. But by the end of the single-player kind of or whatever, the narrative campaign, you know, that each mission is such a pain in the ass to do solo that I'd do them all with people. And there are all these times where you kind of start a mission and then you're playing with people who've either done it before or, like, you're overpowered because everyone's kind of, like, with 4 people, you're too good. So you're kind of blasting through it and people are on your radio being like, okay, the final culminating battle is here. And you're just, like just killing everybody and kind of running. And it blows the pacing completely. Like, there's just no way to really appreciate the story.
Yeah.
Because it's being told in a format that kind of fits a single-player story or a single-player game. But you're doing it with, like, 3 other people and nobody is, like... Like, all bets are off in terms of, like, running through. So that just sounds like an even worse version, like what you're describing, or an even more, you know, ridiculous version.
Yeah, it's different when it's, like, instanced because you're, like, with this group of random people and you feel like – like, I felt – I was, like, nervous while I was watching these cutscenes. I was like, shit, are people going to be mad if they have to wait for me? And, like, everyone – and the one interesting thing about Final Fantasy 14 is that everyone who plays it is just super nice. And they're all, like, I'm like, sorry, like, thanks for being patient, guys. Everyone's like, no problem, man. Like enjoy the story.
Yeah, nice. Yeah.
Everyone's super nice.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's useful. Mm-hmm. Man, it's such a good game. And then so the way it works is after you do the main story campaign, there's like all this other content between the main story and Heavensward, the expansion. Mm-hmm. So there's a ton more story stuff.
And then Heavensward is really good, right? Is the word on the street. Jeez, yeah, so you've just got like a million more hours.
Tons more hours to do. Yeah, I've been paying the monthly fee. I like the game that much that I'm paying $15 a month to play it. So that's a hearty recommendation.
Strong endorsement from for FF14. Has that been your main game? You've been playing anything else?
Yeah, I'm playing, still working on my NBA 2K campaign to win MVP. I've been playing a lot of Bravely Second, which has kind of gotten to a really interesting part in the story, but it's also been dragging in some ways just because it's so everything is so long and you have to worry about your levels and like bosses are challenging, so you have to make sure you're prepared, and it's an ordeal. It's good. I like it a lot, but it's a slog to get through while I'm trying to play a lot of other stuff. I have to beat Trails of Cold Steel before E3 so I can properly play the demo for Trails of Cold Steel 2.
It just never ends, though. Do you ever just feel like, oh my god, I can't. I mean, you're slogging through Bravely Default and you're cranking through Trails of Cold Steel. It's a lot of JRPGs, man.
There's a lot. But the one game I keep thinking about is Final Fantasy 15. Mm-hmm. Like, I just... that is the game that
Eyes on the Prize.
Man, that game is going to be
something. Wait, so what's the release date deal now? I feel like I was on sabbatical for some of this, or I was out. But aren't it and Persona 5 coming out the same month again? Like,
no, Persona 5 is in Japan. It's coming in September.
Oh, okay.
Here, it won't be out here for probably a while after that. Well, actually, Atlas is... I think they're going to announce the U.S. release date at E3 or something.
I thought they had said
like
it was going to be close, or I had heard it was going to be kind of close. Like, it wasn't going to be like 6 months or something, but maybe I'm off on that.
My guess would be December. Hmm. But I have been known to be wrong on this podcast with predictions.
It does happen.
Like saying the NX would be out this year.
Right, that's right. That's right, man.
So yeah, so you've been out of touch with the world of gaming for like 2.5
weeks.
Yeah,
it's been great. I haven't really minded being out of touch. What happened? What happened? What did I miss?
Well, someone was angry about something.
Oh no, really?
People on the internet were really mad.
Like about video games?
Insert topic here.
Wow, that seems hard to believe. I have a hard time swallowing that people might be mad about video games.
I don't know what has been happening. E3 is coming up. That should be exciting.
Yeah.
I'm pretty excited for E3. I don't know.
I like that you don't remember.
Uncharted came out. Doom came out. Homefront came out. What else? Is there any interesting news? I don't know. Did you see anything like that?
You're asking me. You're the news editor of Kotaku.com. You should know all the news.
Man, it all blends together, this nonsense.
It's either people are angry about video games or some video game is coming out or isn't coming out.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm trying to think of like this fall's games or like games that are being announced that are interesting looking. Civ 6 got announced.
Oh,
that
I did
pretty
see
interesting.
That. I mean, God, have you ever been big into Civilization?
Oh yeah, I've always been a big Civ fan. I like my favorite game has been Colonization, but I'm a big Civ guy as well. I'm super stoked for Civ 6.
Man, I don't even know when the last time I had played a Civ game was, and then I played 5. And it was that Civilization story that you always hear.
Yeah, the bug, it hits you.
Where I just started playing, and then it was just, I like started playing at like 8 a.m. or something on a Saturday. Yep. And then it was like 7:30 p.m. And I was like, holy shit, I really played this game all day, like without eating or doing anything. And it was so bad, but great.
Wait, you did this on like recently?
No, this was forever ago. This was a couple years ago for Civ 5. Yeah. So I see Civ 6 get announced, and I just think like, Jesus, I played some of the expansions for Civ 5, but I feel like at this point, Civ 5 is such a bananas, deep, amazing, complicated game that I'm sure it'll be great, but I'm also just intimidated by the thought of it. I'll play the shit out of it, though. I definitely will play it.
Yeah, I think it's going to be really good. Yeah. I hope they, I have a feeling they'll like release it on both PC and like iPad or something like that, because that feels like Firaxis is MO. Maybe not, maybe it'll be just PC. But yeah, I'm super stoked for that game. The two games, the two 4X games that I got really into as a, like growing up and then in my adult years were colonization, which I loved as a kid and still play to this day. It still holds up for me.
Nice.
I don't know if it would hold up for anyone else because you don't like know all the quirks and all the, the how to do things the way that people who grew up with it do. But that's an incredible game. And Alpha Centauri, did you ever play that?
No, I didn't. I think I've talked to you about it talked about it but haven't really played it.
Also very good. But yeah, those games are just they are like a time warp. Like you start playing them, and suddenly you're
it is
decades
yeah,
have gone
like,
by.
It is. It's like you're traveling through time. It's like I just want it to be tonight. So the way to do that
so
is to start up a new game of Civ 5.
Yeah, I'm excited for that. It's gonna be this year is crazy. Like even looking ahead, so it hasn't even been E3 yet, and already it's like Mafia 3 looks really cool, Civ 6 looks really cool.
Yep.
All this other crazy stuff, the new Battlefield. Oh yeah, that happened while you were gone. The new Battlefield announcement.
Oh yeah, that's right. It's like World War One. Everybody.
Yeah, that looks really cool. The trailer is very cool.
Takes about how World War One was a problematic war or whatever, even though
every
war is problematic.
Problematic. Gotta get those takes out.
I watched the trailer for that. Isn't it like Seven Nation Army is playing the White Stripes song?
Yes.
Yeah, I think I watched the trailer. I was like, all right.
And
their
horses
like a Battlefield
and
game.
Tanks.
I guess it'll be cool.
It could be cool. If it runs properly, it'll be
cool. Yeah, right, if it doesn't launch a wreck, which it's Battlefield, it might not.
Yeah, but then there's stuff looking at this year's schedule right now, it's insane.
Yes,
and there's tons of stuff that hasn't even been announced yet. Like say Watch Dogs 2, which will be this fall, and I don't know what else was I just say. Titanfall 2 has been announced but hasn't been shown yet.
Yep.
That's also going to be this fall. What else? There'll be I imagine we'll see some remasters at E3 that are coming this year that also occupy our time. Deus Ex, Dishonored 2 have been announced.
Right,
yeah, the Dishonored 2 release date got announced while you were gone.
Pushed back, right? I think I saw that. It's in the fall or it's in November.
November, something like October or November.
That's fine.
Yeah,
all these games can take their time, man. I'm really like I want to go back to Stardew Valley. Like I want to play more Stardew Valley because I love that game. It was already one of my favorite games of the year. And then I just...
Good thing you have nothing but time on your
hands. Well, I know I don't, though. That's the thing. It's like, I gotta get all this crap done. I've only got a week and a half left. This year has been... I guess it's a result of games getting delayed or whatever, but last year I just remember feeling a little hard-pressed to come up with 10 games for my top 10 games of the year, even though those games were all good. And this year, I already feel like I could probably give you 10,
Think about it. It makes sense, right? So, okay, so end of 2013. In 2013, here's a little bit of gaming history right now. Let's do modern gaming history. Mm. So 2012 and 2013, it was it was the years of is console gaming dying? Is mobile gaming going to replace the console?
Mm-hmm.
Because mobile gaming seemed so hot and Facebook gaming was a thing and console gaming seemed in this lull and publishers were kind of risk averse and shying away from console development because they thought maybe mobile was the next big thing or maybe they things were going to change. And then Microsoft and Sony come out with the Wii U, and the Wii U failed right out of the gate, flopped right out of the gate, and that added to that kind of malaise there. Then Sony and Microsoft announced and then released the Xbox One and PS4, and both of them do incredibly at the end of 2013 and beginning of 2014. So around that time, all these big publishers are like, hey, let's start making a ton of games for these consoles because they're going to have these huge bases in a couple of years, and now we're seeing the results of
that. I mean, it's also some of the best games this year have been XCOM 2, which is a PC exclusive, The Witness, which doesn't seem like it requires a next-gen console to run, and Stardew Valley, PC exclusive. A lot of my favorite games of the year just also feel like weird outliers. But and then there's just these fluke things. We get Uncharted 4, which is really impressive. And then the fact that Doom is kind of in a lot of ways the anti-Uncharted 4. I didn't get to say this is my hot take on Doom, but it's so different, right? It's pure gameplay, no story, and no downtime, and very combat focused. Anyways. But that game winds up being really great. I've just gotten to hell in that game, so I'm not even that far. But I feel like this is one of those games that is going to be like Wolfenstein, where people will be talking about it at the end of the year. And it was barely a blip to me 2 weeks ago. And it just feels one of Dishonored or Deus Ex is going to be great, if not both. Like, I just feel like it's pretty likely that those games will be good.
I think they both will.
Yeah, like, and I just, man, and I know I'm already know that I'm not thinking of like three other games that would be, you know, on my list just from these first 5 months.
Yeah, I mean, and stuff that could come out of nowhere and be announced for this fall, which mm-hmm. is not out of the question.
Yeah.
Like, who knows what the deal is with Red Dead 2? Like,
yeah.
if that's for, I mean, I can see that being for like next May
probably,
or something like
yeah.
that.
And given,
but who knows?
And Rockstar usually does that, right? I feel like they're not a big fall release company, if memory serves.
Also, GTA was September.
Was it? GTA 5?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that was September of 2013, but then...
Red Dead was like summer, that, though, right? Or spring or something
May.
Like that?
Yeah, it was May. Red Dead was May of 2010, which okay. would be... So next May would be 7 years since then, which...
Yeah, it's a long time ago.
Yeah, it's a very long time ago. But not as long as Final Fantasy 15,
nope.
which was... When Versus 13, which was 15's original incarnation, that was announced in May of 2006.
Mm-hmm.
So that was before the Xbox 360 had
shit.
Come out.
This was an entire console
oh, no.
generation.
Was it right after?
It was
before the PS3 had come
then.
Out. It was
yeah.
right after the 360 had come out. Before the PS3 and Wii had come out.
Mm.
So yeah, it was before Gears of War had come out.
Did you like, do a list of this or did we talk about this? Because it was also like
yeah.
right when the iPhone came out. Like the iPhone
right,
hadn't
right,
even
right,
been
yep,
a thing
yep.
when they announced it, which is
yes.
nuts.
So yeah, another generation ago, millennials were not a thing.
Right,
social media was not a thing. But yeah, so that'll be that's we'll talk about that much more, I'm sure. But yeah, hey, so we'll do like an E3 talking prediction
sure.
thing in a couple weeks
mm-hmm.
Before the show
when I'm actually back. When I'm actually
when you're
back.
Actually back at Kotaku. Does this feel weird? Like, does it feel like you're? You're on break from sabbatical to do some work?
I guess so. It's been cool. This sabbatical has been really fun, and it's been really good to kind of reconnect with music and stuff. But it's also actually been nice because it's reinforced for me that I really like this job and that I really like doing it and mm-hmm. miss it, you know? So it's nice to just come back for a minute and talk about video games with you and do the podcast. It's definitely like all positive things. It's doing what a sabbatical, I think, is meant to do. Basically
right. refresh you
yeah and like make you remember what you like about your job and like, you know, get out of the kind of the rut or the routine of it a little bit. So
yeah.
So no, this has been fun. This is great.
Cool I think that's it. I think we gotta start wrapping up.
Yeah, I think we can do that. Wind it down.
Kirk, thank you for coming back.
Sure, man. And right now, as we're talking, the background music is playing. Our new cool outro music is playing. So
yeah, and thanks for writing us some hip new music.
Yeah,
some jazzy new music.
It was very fun to do. Yeah, hopefully we'll probably just change the music up every so often and have a new intro.
No, I think I can see us sticking with this
yeah,
this theme for a long time.
Mm. Maybe I'll do like an acoustic reimagining of it, like for a special day. Like it'll be really quiet,
yeah.
quiet and relaxed. But
yeah, for sure. So yeah, thank you as always for listening to mm-hmm. Kotaku Split Screen. You can reach us at splitscreen@kotaku.com. Subscribe to us on whatever, iTunes, Google Play. Leave us nice ratings and reviews on iTunes because that helps us bump up the charts.
It does.
Kirk, anything else?
No, that's it, man. I'm going to get back to chilling. Just going to go back and chill so hard. It's going to be great.
Chill so hard.
Yeah, can't wait.
That's like your version of ball so hard.
Yes.
All right. Kirk, I will talk to you soon. We will see you again in a couple weeks.
Yep, I will be back. And yeah, I'll talk to you soon, man.
Cool. Bye, man.
All right, bye.